And we are live. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Up in Flames. As always, I am your host, Mo Murphy, and I got a couple great guys in the building, but we will bring them on right after this.
Tell you my problems, meditating my silence. But I keep pushing my pen, rotating my stylus. Brokenness feeling like sin, now no breath, low dollar. Used to be left on red, now all the girls go holler. Now all the girls go follow. All the fake fans gon' pile up. I need peace to borrow, get that shit right back tomorrow. Somehow all the fans go bravo, smile so much to hide my sorrow. Stay this shaky in vibrato. I can't hold a frown too long.
And we are back. Welcome to an episode of Up in Flames. We are going to be talking everything March Madness. And what better? Listen, March Madness has been great. We're going to cover all it. But Duke had a major win, and I got two big-time Duke fans. One, you see the J.J. Redick jersey in the back. Everybody who knows Chris, been on the show a million times. Ken has been on the show a million times. So we both know they're huge Duke fans, and we're going to talk about that first. Ken, what's going on, bro?
A little bit of disbelief after last night. I went on multiple shows saying that I thought Duke's season was ending last night. And so the fact that they had a couple things go their way and now they're into the Elite Eight, I mean, I'm pretty fired up about it. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, 100%. Chris, I'm sure you're feeling the same way.
One shining moment, your heart will be. I don't know the lyrics all of it, but I'm excited. I remember saying on Get a Bucket podcast that if Duke might lose in the first game, depending on their region, just because how they've been playing, when the bracket came out and they were in their region, I was like, oh my god, they got the perfect region. They got the perfect region. Like, they can go far, and they're in Elite Eight. So they struggled at moments this year, but they picked the perfect time to not struggle. So I'm happy.
Yeah. So I want to talk about one thing that I noticed in the game early. And the reason I want to talk about that is because I've noticed it in a lot of games in March Madness is like the better team kind of jump. I say the higher seeded team typically jumps out earlier. Who we expect to win jumps out early. Those teams have been losing a lot in the tournament. The team that jumps out early is up 10 or 12. It looks shaky. Like, we've been getting 40 minutes of great basketball here in the NCAA tournament. And so the way some of these teams have jumped out on teams, even Houston, I mean, now I know starting 8-0 means absolutely nothing in the game. But when you talk about a team where you feel like Houston's probably going to win the game anyway, they come out hitting on all cylinders right away. You think it's going to get ugly. Duke settles in. Duke ends up taking the lead, and it's kind of a back-and-forth game until late in the game. Then Duke's basically just playing, let's hold on to the lead. Was up 5, up 7, up Houston comes, hits a 3. Like, so now they're only up 3. But Duke was really just playing, like, as long as we hold on to this lead, we're going to win the game. So has it stood out to y'all that a lot of teams have jumped out early and then ended up on the losing end while being up double digits early? Because that's been the main thing that's jumped out to me in the tournament.
Can you go?
I guess I've kind of noticed that. I got worried when Houston, first couple minutes, they're already up 6. Duke's offense, they look scared to even take the ball to the rim. And then, yeah, they did settle in. And, I mean, that's kind of been the thing for Duke all tournament. It hasn't really been – I mean, they hit a lot of shots against James Madison, but defensively, like, Duke's been locked in. Like, they've been a really good defensive team. And – I think this just shows the growth of specifically guys like Filipowski and Proctor who were on that team last year. Because we remember Tennessee absolutely bullied them and then they just had no answer. And I think we saw a ton of growth from those two because Proctor made some major stops down the stretch. He had a couple of great steals. Like, he was really locked in. And so, I mean, it was mostly on the defensive side, and obviously Shedd getting hurt like that played a major factor for Houston, but Duke was still playing great defense when Shedd was in the game. Now, I think offensively, Houston might have done a better job because a lot of their offense goes through him as well. But defensively, to see Duke win a game like that where they don't have their best stuff, and, I mean, they held Houston to 51 points, Shedd or not. Like, you're holding one of the best teams in the country to 51 points, I think, is incredibly impressive.
And Shedd wasn't playing good, too, either. Not to cut you off, Ken, but Shedd wasn't – it wasn't like Shedd was cooking us, and then he got – and then that's why we won. He was like one of six from the – one of five from the field. He wasn't playing great. So it wasn't like he was cooking us, and he gets hurt, and that's the difference of the game. Like, people are making it seem like. That's the one thing that irked me this morning.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like, we know that a star player like him, maybe he turns it around in the second half, but it's all, like, who's to say, right? Like, he's already shooting not great. Like, he may have continued with that. And, I mean, yeah, is Duke probably a little bit fortunate to advance? Sure. But we also got to give credit to the fact that, I mean, Filipowski hit a couple of shots at the end of the shot clock where you're like, oh, my God. Like, I can't
believe. Even Coach Dyer was like, drive, drive. And he's like, oh, it's one of those things like, no, no, no. Yeah. It's one of those moments, you know, but.
And I mean, it was honestly a lot of Duke's kind of supporting guys stepped up in a big way. Like, McCain didn't have his best night, but he played pretty well defensively. Ryan Young, I can't believe that he played meaningful minutes in a college basketball game in March and actually looked competent. I know he fouls out late, but he was being asked to do a lot because Mitchell wasn't playing great and he stepped up in a big way. So I think it was just a collective team effort, and Duke finally having like a rotation of not just their starting five. They had a couple guys contributing outside of that was huge. So now they're going to get NC State, which we know the historic run that they're on right now. And we'll see how it matches up. I think they're 6.5 point favorites right now, but I mean, NC State's been rolling.
Yeah. So y'all play NC State. So that's like a perfect segue of talking about the magical run that NC State's been on. They're in the Elite Eight. They got to play Duke. Essentially, probably based on a lot of people's brackets, take fandom out of it. This is probably an Elite Eight matchup on this side of the region that we didn't think. This was not the regional final. I definitely didn't think it was going to be Duke. Excuse me. Duke versus NC State. And that's the regional final. Like, one of these teams – and I feel like both of them were not probable. So one of these teams are going to the Final Four out of the state of North Carolina. Like, they're going to have somebody represent them in the Final Four as a state. Now, North Carolina got knocked off. So obviously people are like, well, who did the Tar Heels root for in this situation? Would they rather see NC State win, or would they rather see Duke win? Kind of a tough predicament to be a Tar Heels fan saying, well, you just don't want neither one of these teams to win a championship at this point. Like, I feel like that's how Tar Heels are. Like, as long as Duke
wins, they don't want Duke.
You don't want Duke to win it. I know NC State isn't the rivalry that Duke is. Trust and believe. I get it.
They don't want Duke to win it at all.
They don't want NC State either, though. Like, they
I don't think that bothers them. Like, if they win, it's like, oh, they had a crazy run. But Duke winning the national championship would be like, no.
Well, if we're talking about winning, if we're talking about what team wins the national championship, then yes, obviously, as a North Carolina, it'd be like Michigan would want anybody, not Ohio State, like North Carolina, not Duke. Like, it could be a lot of other teams, please not Duke. And Duke would feel the same way, like, please not North Carolina winning the championship, anybody but North Carolina. But like, now Duke is playing NC State. So, like, if you're a North Carolina fan sitting back, your biggest rivalry is playing against your in-state rivalry that's in your conference, and you're trying to figure out who would I rather root for. And you don't want, obviously, somebody's got to win. So you have a preference when you hate both teams. I'm sure they'd rather NC State win, especially because if Duke makes it to the Final Four, I think it's more likely that Duke comes out as champions than NC State. Like, NC State, I think if they make it to the Final Four, the run might end there. I don't see them winning a national championship. I think if Duke gets there, Duke could very well win the national championship. And so now you're sitting there as a Tar Heels fan talking about, damn, our biggest rivalry done won the championship. Now you look sick in the face like Ohio State in football just this past season. Like, it's the same thing. You got to watch your biggest rivalry and one of the biggest rivalries in sports, period, professional or college. And you got to sit there and watch your rival hoist up a trophy. I feel like that's tough. But NC State on this magical run, I think the focus is on Burns, right? Like, he's kind of been the – everybody's intrigued with Burns. His NIL valuation has went up. But has he been the biggest key and been the biggest difference in why NC State made this run? Because they also got a guard that he's been balling too, but he's not the national attention. The national attention is on the overweight, seems like a little out of shape guy that's in here balling in the tournament and taking over the tournament. It seems like he's taking over. But Chris, I'll start with you. What's NC State's success and how nervous are you for the game because y'all are playing NC State, who's on a magical run? And we know magical runs can take you to a national championship.
I mean, yeah. I mean, outside of, you know, them beating us and all that, like, it has been impressive and all that. What they've been able to do, like, is it's unprecedented. You don't really see stuff like this where you see a team that, you know, and their coach is – coach, maybe he was, you know, coaching for his job and all, because they were probably not making the tournament if it wasn't for that run.
They were.
Even if they had gotten to the final, even if they had gotten to the final – and lost, they probably still out, and like Wake Forest or even Pitt, because those are teams were that had better resumes than them. But they had a run, you know, five wins in 5 days is impressive. And then it's like, all right, most people thought they get bounced early in the third, including myself. And they just, you know, it's just the all around game. You know, obviously the attention is going to be with the big fella and all that, but. You know, Diarra's playing, and he's doing that, you know, on Ramadan where he's not eating and all that. Like, that's tough to do. Shout out to all those players that going through Ramadan and all that, not, fasting and not eating a drink. Like, it's that's impressive and all that. And you thought that might have come to, you know, for like it might have hurt them, but it didn't and all that. But, you know, DJ Horn has been an integral part to their run and all that. You know, like I said, Diarra, obviously. You know, Burns and all that. Burns didn't have a great game either last game. But, you know, he's also like a really good passer at the post. Like,
yeah, he played, you know, solid. Like, he did everything he needed to do. If he's not scoring offensively, he's not like, oh, we need to get him off the floor. He could pass the ball. He's going to get rebounds. So he can do a lot to where his value is not – he's not a big man that's valued on, if you don't give me 10 dunks and 20 points, then you don't have a reason. There was a point he had 5 points. 7 rebounds and 5 assists early on in the game. Like at halftime, he had 7 rebounds and 5 assists. So it's like, okay, I still am impacting the game at some point. So that's the thing.
Defensively, they've been on point too. Like, you know, not that Marquette is an offensive juggernaut, but they kept Marquette in check and all that. Like, you know, Kolick had a solid game and all that, but you know, nothing crazy. You know, he didn't go off and all that. So they were able to neutralize, you know, Marquette, and not let everybody, you know, they're a very balanced machine, Marquette. And, you know, Adigadara didn't do nothing. He only had like 2 points and all that. So they were able to neutralize, play great defense, and that's why they're the Elite Eight. It is an impressive run. And you know, so it does you have you work, because they did beat us in the first round of the ACC tournament. So it has you worried a little bit. But, you know, I'm looking forward to this matchup because, you know, I have a feeling it won't be the same as last game.
I also, like, I think that there is something to be said for, like, I watched that whole game with Marquette. 4 of 31 from downtown when you average, like, 9 threes a game. And it wasn't even that NC State's defense was, like, up on a lot of those shots. Like, they were missing a lot of open looks. And, like, all the credit to NC State. They go out and win the game. But, like, I don't think that it was necessarily, like, NC State did anything special in order to win that game. I truly think that it was UConn, a 2 seed, playing one of their worst games of the whole year from a shooting perspective. So, like, NC State's going to have to play better than that, I think, to beat Duke in the Elite Eight, because Duke, they're not reliant on downtown shots. Like, a lot of it goes through Filipowski. There's a lot of mid-range stuff with Roach and Proctor and stuff. So, I do think that NC State will have to elevate more than they did in that game, because I think it was more so they caught a 2 seed on a bad night than they like really like beat them. That was at least my interpretation.
And one thing Duke will be able to do, especially with Filipowski, is Filipowski is going to be able to take Burns out of the paint, because Filipowski can shoot from deep. So that to me is something. And Shire has done a really good job of making adjustments. Like, even if it's in-season adjustments and in-game adjustments, that's something he's improved. And listen, he's only in his second year, so he's still learning. You know, he did this last year with Proctor and Roach. The whole thing was, like, Proctor needs the ball in the hand more. He finally put the ball in Proctor's hand more. They went on a run to win the ACC tournament and all that. So this year, he's made those adjustments and all that. And with the, especially with the guards, putting McCain having the ball in McCain's hand more, you know, giving Roach the ball more, like, and Proctor too, like using all three of your guards and having them all, you know, work with each other, make, essentially like a three-man game, you know, because they don't have a wing that can create like they used to, like they usually have in the past. They've had the Zions, the Jason Tatums, you know, the Brandon Ingrams, all those type. They don't have that type of player. So they have to be creative and all that. So they've been able to do that. And I think with this matchup, you know, I think they're going to learn from, you know, what happened when they lost to, you know, NC State, you know, in the ACC tournament. I think, you know, Shire is going to make the correct adjustments and all that. And I think it's going to be, I believe it's going to be a different outcome. And I think, you know, but, you know, shout out to NC State, though. They've had a great one. But, you know, I think this time around, it's going to be a little bit different. I think Shire is going to make the proper adjustments and all that.
So I want to ask y'all before we move on from Duke, I do want to ask y'all. So, you know, Chris, you said something. I was going to ask this question, but you said something that hints towards what I was going to ask. So y'all are in the second year of Shire as head coach, right? But Duke is in the Elite Eight. At the end of the day, the one thing you can't prevent, it say Duke across your chest. With Duke across your chest comes expectations. The expectation is to win this game and get to the Final Four because historically this is what Duke does. They win these big games. They make these runs. They won national championships, but a lot of that was under Coach K. Has expectations as fans, like for you and Ken, has it changed with Shire? And I want to say now, like maybe it changed immediately. All right, we lose Coach K. We can't expect the same greatness right away. But like Shire in his second year is in the Elite Eight with an opportunity to go to the Final Four, which basically to me means like he took the torch that Coach K passed him, and now the expectation continues. We are a team that is going to go far in the tournament. We are going to compete for a national championship every year. In games like this, we win more often than not. But does the expectation to win this game change because it's Shire in his second year as opposed to legendary Coach K coaching in these games that we know he wins? Does Duke expectations change?
No. We're also
– the standard is the standard – is it because Shire has filled in and made like the standard can go on that way because of the job Shire's done in the first 2 years? Like he's done.
I think a lot of it has to do with like, look at the matchup, right? Like, yeah. Like if we had Duke squaring off with Marquette, then I think it would be, man, that's going to be another tough game. But
or UConn. You know that- playing yeah. UConn, I would say we had no chance, you know.
We're going to talk about UConn in a second, too.
And so I think that's why, like, the expectation around this game is that NC State's had a good run. They beat us in the ACC tournament. Now it's revenge time. Like, we're going to step on their throats and we're going to beat them. Because you would say Duke is the more talented team. I don't think that anyone would argue against that.
No.
And you're playing an 11 seed at the end of the day. Like, so the expectation around that game now, if they go on and win and then they're facing the winner of Purdue and Tennessee, maybe the expectations at that point change. But I still think that with the way that the Duke fan base works, it's no different than Alabama football or Patriots football back in the day. Like it was
the standard is the standard.
The standard is championship. Like Final Four would be great for Shire in his second year and would probably solidify that he's going to be the guy moving forward. But what does Final Four get you? Nothing. Like in college basketball, it gets you. Yeah. Shire went to a Final Four. It just bought him another 5 years, but it's about championships at the end of the day.
I hate that we rack up Final Fours. Like we don't do that in any other sport where we're like, oh man, we rack up. Oh, they went to this many. We don't do that in football. Oh man, they
built. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
Not like that.
We listen.
It depends on the program. We don't say.
The difference is, listen to where you were about to go. So the difference is, right? We don't rack that up for the Bill Belichicks, the Nick Sabans, the I don't know who.
I think it's program more so than coach, though.
Program, yeah, yes, but like Shire making a Final Four in year two, to me, outside looking in, not a Duke fan, not holding the Duke standard
of great
program, but in year two, it means a lot, especially when you're thinking about, like, if he made the Final Four in his second year, like, we and we're recruiting the same caliber of talent with Coach K, like, we easily can be a consistent competing for a championship team. And I think you have to establish that, because it'd be hard to say Shire could win a national championship at Duke if he doesn't make a Final Four in his first two or three years, if he hadn't played in a national championship in his first two or three years, if he loses this game and then next year loses in the round of 32, a Sweet 16. But like, being in the Final Four, typically, especially Duke, they make it to the Final Four this year, or they make it to the national championship this year. With what they got coming in next year, like, I think it would be
the reason why
the Final Four this year.
The reason why it would be bigger this year is because you would call this a down year for Duke, which is crazy because they're still the four seed entering. Like, I saw the stat that Duke hadn't beat a better seed in the tournament in, like, it was a long time. Like,
straight time they've lost to the higher seed.
But
they're typically the higher seed.
That's the thing. They're typically a one or a two, maybe a three. So you would call a four-seeded Duke team probably a down year based off of historical perspective. They've had bad years, but those teams don't go on and win multiple tournament games. Like,
yeah, those teams don't go on to the Final Four.
Duke was a six, and then they lost out. They've missed the tournament. Like, there's been bad years, but to take a four-seeded Duke team that – entering the tournament, I felt like this was a first weekend team. I know that was pretty consistent across the board until the James Madison game. And if they go to the Final Four, knowing that Cooper Flagg's coming in next year, like, that would certainly help. But again, I think, yeah, Final Four is great, but the expectations for Duke isn't Final Four, because when you've won five championships in the last 30 years, then like that's
what does that sound like? Y'all sound like Alabama fans. It's not wrong. I'm just saying, like, it is.
Honestly, if it's UConn, if you're UConn, because you've won a number of championships over the last number of years, UConn fans probably call this season a failure if they don't go and win the national championship.
I'm glad you mentioned UConn, because it's good. You're right.
But that's the standard when you've won multiple, right? Like Michigan State hasn't won, and I hate to pick on Izzo. Like, they haven't won since 2000. He's had a lot of great years, like, but he gets picked on because he's only got one, right? It was like Jay Wright was starting to join the club before he retired because he won two. And once you start winning multiple as a program, especially over a number of years, then the expectation just changes around it, which is crazy because we know that the best team doesn't win March Madness every year.
typically
the way that the tournament works is a one and done, right?
So yeah, but how often is it one of the five best teams don't win the championship though? Like, does that happen off, like, one of the five best teams in the country don't end up winning, or top 10, like a top 10 team entering the tournament? How often is it that, like,
you'd probably point to the UConn teams as like ones that entering March Madness weren't like top 10 teams in the country. Not this last year. Like, I'm talking like the Napier and Kemba years. Like,
but typically, like, a team that is expected to win or very well has a high percentage to win usually wins. Now, in between that, like, until we get to the national championship, in between that, a lot of teams that shouldn't win games win a lot of games. I mean, NC State is in the Elite Eight, and I'm not knocking NC State, but when an 11 seed is in the Elite Eight, like, it is a magical run, and you've won more games than you should have, than expected. But, like, talking about UConn, there's two teams in this tournament that I think up to this point, my opinion, look unbeatable. UConn is one of them. I think Purdue is the other up to this point. Now, I think we are now in the point we expect Purdue to fold. At some point, we don't think this will lead to Purdue facing UConn in the national championship, but Purdue has looked different to me, because if they were going to fold, I think they would have already folded, in my opinion. Like, I thought Purdue would either – this team can either make it to the Final Four or lose in the first or second round. Like, they either are first weekend out or – they're in the Final Four, and I think they've looked like the second-best team in the country, because UConn looks like they might walk into the national championship and just blow everybody out. That's the consensus around the college basketball world right now, right? Is like, I mean, we've had people say UConn could be the NBA team, which is bullshit. It's bullshit, but I'm just saying it tells you how good the UConn team has been playing for people to come out and say something dumb like that. But like it's a dumb overreaction based on how good a team has been. Is there a team that could beat UConn?
Like, I mean,
you know, Duke fans, if Duke plays UConn in the national championship, do you really love your chances? Or are you sitting here like, holy hell, it would be a true miracle if we ended up national champions by beating UConn. Like, I think UConn's that good. Any other team in the country is that good.
You know who could beat them? The team they're playing.
Yeah. The thing is, it's crazy that UConn is 8.5-point favorites when Illinois is playing as great as they are.
Well, Terrence Shannon has been on an absolute tear.
And trust me, I know how good UConn is, but like, I'm just saying, like, you're talking about Illinois that won the Big Ten tournament, and then they handled Iowa State pretty well, and they're 8.5-point dogs. Like,
yeah, they can match up. They can match up with the size with UConn, you know, because Coleman Hawkins, you know, a Quincy Guerre, they have the size, and then they got a guy who can take over. And Terrence Shannon, which he has absolutely done, you know. Yeah. And if it wasn't for all those
this tournament, don't he average like 24, 25?
He's averaging, no, I think he's averaging more than that, to be honest. I think he's averaging like 28. He is,
underselling, my fault.
He's averaged more. Yeah, it's got to be around
25. If you average 24, 25 in the tournament in college basketball, though, that's insane. So the fact he averaged like 27, 28
he had 29 versus Iowa State. He had 30,
which is one of the best defenses in the country. That he had
26 versus Moorhead State. So, like, all right, that's 20, whatever that's 27, whatever that is. So right. He's been on a tear. They're the team that could beat him because they can match the size and the scoring, and that's what you need to beat a UConn team. If you can match the physicality,
their defense isn't great, but they can keep up with them on the scoring front. Where you can beat them, you would treat it how Bama treated North Carolina, which is like, we're hoping to win this game like 90-86. Like, we're hoping to win this game with a ton of points. And just know that UConn, with how good they are offensively, they're probably going to score 80. So we have to figure out a way to just.
Yeah. And one thing that Coleman Hawkins can do is figure out with Klingon, because you don't want Klingon to be in the paint. That's where he dominates. What Coleman Hawkins can do is he can shoot threes and all that. So that's what they're going to need to do as Illinois. Be able to take Klingon out of the paint so that can, you know, Terrence Shannon be able to get to the basket without having to do, you know, without having Klingon, who's 7'2" and all that, has a big body and blocks everything. So that's what they're going to be able to do. And I think they can't, they'll have their chances. And if they can do that and excel at that, then they'll have a shot. But it's going to be a tough task for Illinois because the amount of guys UConn has. Caravan, Cam Spencer, maybe the best transfer this season. Mm-hmm. Rutgers. I mean, it's just been he's been a home run transfer and all that. Tristan Newton has played tremendous and all that, you know. And that's what Stephen Castle, their top freshman, you know, he's doing his thing. He's the best prospect out of all these guys. Like he's a stud and all that when he's going. And he's kind of like a 4th-5th option. So
is he going to the
league? It'll be tough for Illinois, but they can do it though. They're the one team I think they can do.
And I'll say this much:
the league after this year, no.
Castle?
Yeah, is he coming back?
No, he's gone. He's a top five, top 10 pick.
Okay.
The thing that I'll say is that if Illinois doesn't do it, I'm pretty confident that UConn's going to be in the title game. Because I don't think that I don't think either Clemson nor Bama can really keep up with UConn. I think
that's the benefit of like two teams that really shouldn't be there in the Final Four end up there to match up against UConn. And I don't see UConn losing to any team that shouldn't be there. Like I think if they make it to the national championship and let's say Duke beats NC State, let's just for argument purposes, Purdue beats Tennessee. So now it's Purdue and Duke. I think, you know, when UConn, let's say UConn beats winner of Clemson and Alabama, like now UConn will be in the national championship against a team that should be there. Duke is Duke. I don't care about their 4 seed. It still says Duke across their chest. His team knows how to win championships historically. And then with Purdue, we know they've been one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the country throughout the year. So like they would deserve to be there. I don't see a team that shouldn't be there beating UConn. So if UConn does beat Illinois, I'm with Ken. I think they'll end up at the very least in the national championship playing what I would probably say is Purdue or Duke, because I think those are going to be the two winners. But I want to talk about Purdue because I think people are disrespecting Purdue and what they've done. And you guys are draft guys. And y'all, the way y'all cover college basketball, the NBA, and the way y'all talk draft is on the opposite side of how I hate this time of year when the draft guys are coming. Like, it's hard to believe that Purdue is so good because Zach Edey may not be an elite NBA player. Like, so that's where people go, well, Zach Edey's not an NBA player, so how good is what Purdue's doing? Who cares? Like, let's take the draft out of it. Let's take what a guy looks like in the NBA out of it and be like, bro, Zach Edey's the best big man in the country right now. Probably.
He's going to be two-time national player of the year.
And he's arguably the best big man in the country. So whether that translates to the NBA or not, I think people who think so much about NBA and NBA draft right about now, let it cloud how good Purdue actually is, because Zach Edey is the best player on that team and he's not a true NBA prospect. He's probably a second-round pick, maybe an undrafted free agent that goes to the right spot, but I'm not sure he goes in the first round. Y'all would know better than I would when it comes to the NBA draft. But
in this draft, he's a first-round pick.
But, like, people don't
– any other draft, he's, like, mid-second.
Yeah. In this draft, who knows with this draft? This draft
could get crazy.
He still might go in the lottery for all I know this draft. Yeah. But
I wouldn't be mad at it, but, like, do y'all not think – like, because y'all do this. Y'all cover the draft. Do y'all not think people – like, our clouded judgment with Purdue based on thinking of how Zach Edey would be as an NBA player, and because he's not the next Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid, people aren't respecting Purdue in this run that they're making as much? Like, I think it plays a factor, but do y'all? No?
I don't think it plays a factor. I think it's the narrative because they've lost, they folded on top of the fact. I don't think it has nothing to do with, like, the draft. Like, Edey's draft thing has always been a thing of a question. Like, last year he tested it, and, you know, and last year was obviously a better class and all that. So he actually made the right decision to come back, and obviously NIL helps and all that. So, I don't think it's more of the draft stuff, because they don't have a lot of NBA players on there. I don't think they have maybe Edey. That's it, you know. I think it's more just because they lost in the first round last year. I think that's the what the narrative is and all that, and people are basing their brackets and predictions off, oh, well, they always fold, and they've had good teams in the past, you know, the Jade and Ivy teams.
It's because Purdue's across the chest, right?
Like, yeah, and it's Purdue, and they haven't had runs and all. So I think that's more – but covering the team, all, like, just, you know, doing Get a Bucket with Kevin, all that, we felt like, no, this team is different. They're not the same – Purdue team, and everybody, you know, they always, a lot of people pick them to get upset or whatever. I was like, no, I think they're gonna roll. I think they're gonna roll. I think they're on a mission. The team is built different. They're a year older, a lot, because remember last year their guards were freshmen and all that, and they didn't have handles, you know, and then they just, when things get a little tight and you got a freshman, and you know, things happen and all that, and especially when you're inside out, when you're based inside out. If you can't get the ball inside as much, things are going to happen. And that's what happened to him last year against Fairleigh Dickinson. This year, those guys are older and all that. They got Lance Jones there. Gillis is there. They're just more mature and all that. And it's kind of like what happened with, you know, when UVA lost in the first round. They came back. They're just a year older, more mature and all that. And then they go on a run. I think the same thing with Purdue. So I think that it's just narrative of based off their – I don't think it – with Zach Edey's drafting and all that. I don't think that's a big factor. I think it's just because they lost in the first round last year and people are skeptical. They did the same thing with Virginia.
It's the same thing with Virginia. For the last 15 years, you've read Purdue on your bracket and you've said, okay, I'll probably have them out in the Sweet 16, maybe the Elite Eight, like most years. But what's crazy is Purdue is number one in three-point shooting percentage as a team. And a lot of that has to just do with, like, they got back to their roots in the second half against Gonzaga last night because it was a very close game. And then they said, fuck this. We are dumping the ball into Edey. He is going to go to work. And when they have to come down and double, then we are going to get a lot of wide open 3-point shots. And Gonzaga just didn't have an answer. And the whistle is always going to be friendly with Edey because he's such a big guy and he's so physical. Like, he's going to get hacked a lot. He's going to get a lot of calls. That's the way that it goes.
when you have a big guy like that, especially in college. And I mean, just the teammates around him have gotten better. That's a huge thing, because Edie's putting up the same numbers that he did last year. There's a reason why he's going to go back to back for National Player of the Year. But when you have other guys around you that are stepping up, and I think Purdue knows their true identity. It is, we are going to dump it into Edie, and then he is going to create, or he is going to dish it out, and we're going to get some open shots. And that's what makes it so hard to beat a team like Purdue. I also think that, yeah, the road has been very good for them. Like, they definitely blew out Utah State badly. Gonzaga didn't match up well, just from a size perspective. Now I think Tennessee, that's going to be a really fun game to watch. And I'll just say it, Kinnick's got to be better. Like, he has not been what he was in the regular season this entire tournament. I know he finished with like 26 last night, but there were stretches of that game where he was really bad. Now, what helps Tennessee is the fact that in years past, what's killed them in the tournament, they don't have that guy. They don't have a guy that is going to shoot 15, 20 times in a game and create his own offense. And that's why Tennessee gets bounced all the time. Also pretty crazy that Tennessee has never made a Final Four. So part of me is rooting for them to get to the Final Four, because I think a program with such a storied history as them, they need to finally get to the Final Four. And if they don't do it this year, I don't know if it's ever going to happen. So I think it's going to be a fun matchup. Like, if Kinnick plays his best, if Edie's at his best, then we could get a really classic Elite Eight game on that bottom right corner of the bracket.
Fletcher Lawyer, Braden Smith, like those are two freshmen who had moments last year, but they tensed up in the first round. Yeah. That's not the case there. And they got a little bit more swag to them and all that. See them getting confident when they're hitting shots. They know they're good
now. Like, they're here now. Like, now Purdue is here. Like, and a lot of times, like, when you lose early, you do need to get that swagger back. And you can see it all through the regular season, but, like, guys don't get their swagger back till the playoffs. And I say playoffs, NCAA tournament, whatever it may be. And I think the more you win in the NCAA tournament, now you're in the Elite Eight. We can win the whole thing now. We're in our regional final. Like, we are almost to the Final Four. You are not, no team left is supposed to think otherwise. The better talent you have, the more, the deeper you are with guys coming off the bench, and the better head coach you have, the better you're going to feel with the more, God, what's the word I'm looking for? Chris, you just said it. Oh my God. Swagger, like more swagger about yourself, just to shut up. But like, so I think that's what does make Purdue dangerous is, like, they are a team that could win the national championship, but now it comes off like they believe they belong and could win the national championship. And that's a lot of times, or you're talking about some of the best teams in the country. That's the most dangerous thing. And I think you're seeing that with UConn. Obviously, they won it last year. So, like, any of those guys that were on the roster last year and are in this year know they can win it, because it's been done. They were on the roster when it happened. And I think Purdue was like, man, we've kind of passed the stage of where we folded. We kind of passed the stage of losing games that people expect us to lose that we shouldn't lose. And so now, I guess, losing to Tennessee, is it really like, if Purdue lost by three, do they really, is it considered they folded in the Elite Eight, or just they lost to Tennessee? Like, you wouldn't, Purdue's past the point of folding, right? Like, any loss after this is respectable unless they get, like, blown out, right?
You're losing to a two seed.
You know, and so it's a two seed that was in the top five for a lot of the year. Like, this is not a weak two seed that won a conference tournament. They actually got bounced early in the SEC tournament. So, no,
it's not going to be a fold. I mean, it's obviously disappointing, but it's not a fold. You lose to the number two seed. They can't really call that, like, getting folded. And it's not a 16 seed, so.
Yeah, unless you get, like, blown out. Like, if they got blown out, like, by 20 to Tennessee, like, you'd be like, you folded. You didn't even make this game competitive. But as far as – I don't expect Purdue to get blown out by Tennessee. Another team I want to talk about, the most improbable team, I feel like, in this Elite Eight right now is Clemson. My personal opinion. And the reason I say that, like, Alabama's been good in years past. Like, NC State obviously being an 11 seed, but, like, they went on a run and won the ACC tournament. So, like, we've seen these special runs in these conference tournaments that lead into a lot of wins in the NCAA tournament. But, like, Clemson is in the Elite Eight and could possibly be in the Final Four. And I think they got a high chance of beating Alabama. Like, don't get me wrong.
They beat them already.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that their road is here. We're talking about a Clemson team, a football school, a true football school for the past 15 years might end up and be the most improbable team to be in the Final Four. What has been the biggest key to their run to the Elite Eight? And Ken, I'll start with you, but what has been their biggest key in this run? And does it end here? Like, are they losing? Do you got Alabama over them and you think it was a cool run? Nice story, and it ends here. Like, hey, Clemson might be in the Final Four and wreak some havoc, even though they match up against UConn, right? So, like,
yeah. I mean, I think if you asked us in December, could we see Clemson in the Elite Eight, we would say, hell yeah, because they had so many good non-conference wins. Like, we're talking Bama was a big win, UAB, South Carolina, Boise State. Like, they were picking up quality wins, and then they went through a slump at the worst time because their slump was at the end of ACC play, which then parlayed into them losing out early in the ACC tournament. PJ Hall's been pretty solid. But he's getting a lot of help, which I don't think has consistently been there this year. Like, there were times where PJ Hall, if he got into foul trouble, then Clemson would almost shut down as a team. Like, they didn't know what their identity was. And so I think it's honestly just it's been more of a collective team effort than we've seen from them throughout the year. And I mean, I'm happy for him. I think that, you know, the New Mexico game was because we know this. How many people had New Mexico coming out of that opening game? And then
a lot.
And then Clemson beat them by 21 and made a statement. Baylor, we thought, was a bit of a weaker three seed because they didn't defend well. And, I mean, Clemson took advantage of that. And then Arizona, They fold, though.
They're known to fold. Arizona's another team that's known to fold around.
They have a good coach. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's been phenomenal in his couple of years there so far. Yeah, the history hasn't been great for Arizona in recent years, but I mean, Caleb Love had a bad night.
And that's why I think Arizona's problem is, though, is I think they've been a team that's been so dependent on like an elite guard that can get his own bucket whenever he wants. And every time you could do that in a regular season, you could do that against inferior opponents, or you could do that against a team that's slightly better than you, but not much better than you, unless Caleb Love is on. But you knew, like, it always seemed like if Caleb Love has a bad game, Arizona's going to lose that game. And it happened.
It honestly wasn't just him, though. I mean, like, Boswell was bad.
Boswell was terrible, bad
as well. So, like, I mean, again, I think it's you're a two seed that just has an off shooting night from your guards. And that's why this tournament is as unpredictable as it was, because Clemson's been pretty consistent. They're scoring in the mid-70s every game, and then they're holding you to mid-60s, low-70s. Like they know who they are. And, I mean, this is going to be does Bama shoot the lights out and just puts up 100 and they move on? Or do they have an off-shooting night like they did against Grand Canyon where they could have got in the previous round, but luckily they just didn't take care of business down the stretch? So I think it is kind of two contrasting styles here, because I don't think that Clemson wants to get into a shootout, but I think they've been good enough defensively where maybe they can slow down Bama a bit. So I still think that no matter who wins this game, if they're going to lose in the Final Four, but this will just be a fun game to watch because it's a rematch of earlier in the year. And it's not as if Bama shot terribly in that opening game. I think they still hit like 10 or 11 threes in that first matchup. So do they go nuclear from downtown and then they win big? Like, I don't know. I think a lot could happen with that game overall.
So can Alabama win this game and rectify the SEC a little bit? Because like the SEC been down bad in this tournament as far as early.
Tennessee's but, still good. Like,
yeah, like Tennessee or Bama. Like, let's say Bama wins and Tennessee wins. Like, as much as like Auburn and Kentucky impacted the SEC big time as far as folding. And the SEC is kind of known to fold it come tournament time. Like, that's a thing around that conference and how good we've seen this team have a lot of good conferences. There's some years, especially I say in the past 5 years, there's been some years where the SEC has been just as good as the Big Ten or just as good as the ACC entering the tournament. And then that's where we see the separation. That's where we see five, six teams in the ACC in the Sweet 16. And that's where we see the separation of what the ACC could do and then Big Ten and SEC. I think because the Big Ten by the Sweet 16, damn, they're holding on for dear life to have anybody represent their conference. And I think the SEC is
hoping Michigan State goes on a run at that point. Right. I mean,
exactly.
I don't think that we're even that concerned about the SEC because they do have two teams in the Elite Eight. Big 12, no representation for a conference that was as good as it was this year is pretty crazy. Like
the Big 12. And then, but people were like, this is a down year for the ACC. And they
you got three ACCs, you've got a couple SECs, a couple Big Tens, and a Big East.
But this is a guaranteed ACC team going to the Final Four.
But keep in mind, guys, also Mountain West, six teams in the tournament, none in the Elite Eight. So,
but like, did we
expect? Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like
you know, they also the Mountain West also
got six, and the Big East only get three. And it wasn't just the fact that they don't have any in the Elite Eight; it's that when they've lost out,
but the Mountain West, their teams got misseeded terribly bad. Like they got,
the Mountain West was like overvalued as a conference, essentially. Like,
well, I think we saw in the tournament that they lost a lot of games pretty badly.
I feel like having six
teams. And I know that some of them are against good teams. Like you get blown out by Purdue if you're Utah State. All right, I get it. UConn blew out San Diego State. That's fine. But there were some other ones in there that weren't great. So I just had to point that out because that was a point of contention before the tournament.
It was a major. Yeah, I remember like going into the tournament on Selection Sunday, like when it was all said and done and everybody kind of breaking down who got what, like there was a major thing about like the Mountain West having six teams, the Big East had three. Like there was a big, how did the Big East only have three teams?
That wasn't wrong. I mean, the Mountain West has been good all year. So like they, you know, five, maybe six is too much, but definitely five. And
I think it was the number of teams.
Yeah, on Selection Sunday, the casuals come out and weigh in. Like, you got somebody like me who be like,
they're told the Big East is great three all year, but they weren't.
It was a top-heavy conference.
It was three teams, and, like, the teams people complain about, like St. John's, Seton Hall, like, those teams could have got in, but guess what happens? Teams win their conference tournaments that the NC State stole a bid. There was a few other teams that won conferences that
stole this year.
So like, hey, you know, that's the difference. You know, that's why you got to play better during the regular season. Like St. John's,
early tournament play, Chris, because what happens is they lose out in one of those opening games and then they go, we're going to get in either way. Got a resume.
It's not even that. St. John's, they have to look at a few games where they lost.
They should have taken advantage of games earlier in the year.
And free throws cost them a game against UConn. And in the Creighton game, you win one of those games you're in. Same thing with Seton Hall and all that. So, like, the Big East three teams, I look back and, like, yeah, it's like, all right, yeah, they really, really, because everybody else was kind of mid or really bad. You know, like, so, you know, the Mountain West deserved, but they also got seeded horribly, too, because that's what the NCAA did. Like, hey, we're going to give you five, six teams, but we're going to put you, we're going to give you five, six seeds and we'll put you in games that, or 10 seeds and you're going to have a tough time. So they kind of got a crappy draw with that. Yeah, they got 16, but they also got really bad draws. But hey, that's how the cookie crumbles, like they say.
That's what happens when you're the Mountain West.
Are either of y'all's brackets still intact? Y'all got y'all national champs still in?
No. I have in the Off the Ball Network one, I picked UConn. And in the other one, I have Duke. So I'm still alive in both.
It's crazy. So I want to
talk. My hedge bracket, though, was Houston.
I changed up. I did a Mo. You know how Mo picked Auburn? I was like, you know what? I think UConn's winning the national championship. But yeah. I was like, you know what? I like Creighton. I picked Creighton. And then Creighton lost to Tennessee.
Bro, but people were killing me for picking Auburn. My thought process, one, first off, watching conference tournament play, they had impressed me the most. I talked to y'all about it. Y'all know. But two, it was trying to be unconventional. Like, when you get in these tournament challenges for some money, if everybody picks UConn, then, like, your bracket gets determined probably in the round of 32 and who you had making the Elite Eight when you have the same national champ. But I knew walking in, everybody going to pick UConn. Everybody else that don't pick UConn probably going to rock with Houston. Maybe you'll sprinkle some Purdue and North Carolina, but everybody pretty much going to rock with the one seeds. Let me find that 4 or 5 seed that I think can maybe win that one matchup. Because, you know, when you pick like a 4 seed to get to the national championship, you got to pick them to be the one seed. And so I thought Auburn could beat Connecticut. Now, granted, since I've thought that, Auburn got bounced day one, like, well, day two of the tournament, but round one, and UConn has looked like the most unbeatable team in the country. So I was completely wrong, but, like, you're not wrong. I asked Ken, I asked Walker. So, like, I asked the Kev, I asked all the guys that I know watch college basketball, am I crazy for this pick? I know y'all weren't picking off, but am I crazy? And everybody, nah, that's not a wild pick, especially the reasoning. Like, you're trying to find somebody unconventional. Hey, finding Auburn could, that's a solid pick. And then they lost the first round. Everybody was like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's all about matchups, though.
The ejection 5 minutes in didn't help Auburn, too.
No, it didn't. But I don't think anybody thought they were going to lose. Like, everybody was like, oh, yeah, Mo, you good because they'll at least make it to, like, the Sweet 16 to where, okay, you pick a national champ, they lose in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. You can live with that. Your bracket get busted on the second day of the tournament. Do you know how sick I was? I was sitting there like, bro, I'm not even watching college basketball for my bracket no more. Like, now I'm just watching to enjoy the tournament.
The other thing, too, though, is that it's always risky when you pick a 3 or 4 because you know that that second-round matchup against a 5 or a 6 seed is always going to be a much tougher battle than, like, you know, a UConn or Purdue where they're taking on an 8 seed in the second round, right? Like, there's a lot of risk that goes into picking a non-1 or 2 seed to go and win the national championship. And this just so happens to be that year where we got a lot of 1 seeds left. We got some 2s. Like, I don't know. It's a tough one.
UConn a fight, too, and that's the crazy part. They actually match up solid against UConn.
That was why I picked them, because they matched up good against UConn.
That's how this works, though, is the matchups. It's all about and that's what I said about Duke. Like, if they were in any other region, I think they're out already. But the fact that they're in their region, in the South region, like, it was like, oh my, I'm like, when I did it with Kevin, we found out who was in, I was like, yo, Duke actually, they're in the perfect region. Like, they might actually go, and the way I saw Houston playing towards the end of the season, I was like, yeah, I think I would pick Houston if you asked me right now, but I think they could beat them. I think they could beat them, man. You know, so it's just all about matchups and all. Like, Auburn,
they can't lose right now
if they just beat, you know, but it's just how it works.
Like Jeff said, you can't lose to Yale, though. Like, if you're Auburn, and this is a team that a lot of people saw. Yeah,
you know how it is in basketball in a one-and-done situation. Yeah, you can't lose anybody, bro. Like,
yell, though, dog. Like, you know.
Well, Purdue shouldn't have lost to Fairleigh Dickinson, and they lost.
Right. And Purdue, essentially, losing to Fairleigh Dickinson last year, they paid the price as far as how confident you were, anybody was in Purdue making a deep run and being a one seed that could reach a national championship or a Final Four. So, like, you paid a price, and I definitely thought Auburn – well, I'm going to be honest. At the end of the day, I said where I'm separating myself with Auburn is picking them over UConn. That was it. I was like, that's where I'm going to separate myself, and I'm either going to win or lose the bracket in this matchup. I didn't bat an eye picking Auburn over Yale and picking them over whoever I thought they were going to play in the second round. I'm like, okay, where I'm getting unconventional is I'm going to take them over UConn, while probably majority of the people I'm going against is going to take UConn over Auburn. If Auburn wins that game, I'm sitting here good. They ain't even make it. Chris, they didn't even make it to the Sweet 16. They lost to Yale, and I know basketball is different. But when you are a very good team and you're in the SEC or you're in the ACC or you're in the Big Ten, and we know this is why we love the tournament, because the tournament is where a Yale can beat an Auburn. Because we all know if this was college football, that shit ain't happening. Auburn was not losing by 3 points to no Yale football team, but in basketball it can happen. But when you pick Auburn to go win the national championship, and we're talking about on Friday, the second day of the field of 64, you lose in the first round. Like, Chris, I was sick. I was sick because I really believe – I started – not only was I impressed with Auburn, but talking to y'all, I really started believing it. Like, you know when sometimes you lie to yourself and you want to make yourself believe it, but you don't, and you're like, I probably won't go with Auburn. And I just start talking to everybody. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I got to ride the Auburn train.
Top 10 in offense, top 10 in defense, all the nerd
everything sites, you want in a team that can win a national championship.
All the nerd sites that, you know, that I'm on, like, they have one like top 4 in their rankings, and then they lose.
I was and then so Nail said, your rankings don't matter. We're the ones who work on spreadsheets, not you.
Yeah. And then Yale loses by 20 to San Diego State the next game. It was probably
all the Yale analytics guys that had Auburn as like a top 5 team anyway. So, like, and they're like, yeah, we're going to trick everybody and trick idiots in the hole, like buying into how good Auburn is. And it was based on our data. And then we're going to come and beat them. So that kind of irked me. So before we close out, Ken, I know you're not the most interested in this conversation. We're not going to keep it long-winded. Don't leave, though. Just stay. The Caitlin Clark situation. So we all know Ice Cube offered her $5 million to play in the Big Three. Now, the Big Three season lasts what? Like 6 weeks? Like, we're talking about 10 games, probably. They're traveling. Like, we're talking about 6 weeks. Like, we're not. Yeah, no. I don't necessarily watch the Big
Three. I haven't watched this like after the first season, to be honest.
But like, so we're talking about 6 weeks, 10 games, and then we're talking about Ice Cube. So forget how much the Big Three makes. We're talking about probably Ice Cube was like, I'll give you $5 million of my own money to come play in the Big Three. Now, people were upset about it. Oh, how come Caitlin Clark gets this opportunity? All these other great women before this, and Caitlin Clark's the one that gets the opportunity. Obviously, it becomes it's a black and white thing. And if Angel Reese had got this opportunity, and Ice Cube, the thing about it was this wasn't even supposed to get out. Ice Cube has silently made this offer and said, I really didn't want this out till after the tournament, but since it's out, I'm going to come and confirm. Yes, we did offer her $5 million to play in the Big Three. Why are people so upset? And I just want to paint this in perspective before I get just y'all's opinion quick before we close out. I want my fellow brethren, my fellow black folks to understand that if y'all are not, we gonna get your opinion, but this is the people that are, what people are upset about. They are mad that a black man is capitalizing on capitalism because it's not Angel Reese, because it's not Hidalgo from Notre Dame, because it's not another color person, it's Caitlin Clark. So now let's go in an uproar. But Ice Cube is just capitalizing on capitalism. Are y'all, so really my question for you, like, Ken, do you understand why Caitlin Clark got offered $5 million to play in the Big Three? Like you get it, right? Like what else are you supposed to offer?
I mean, we're just giving so much oxygen to a publicity stunt. Here's the reason why it's a publicity stunt. Because when you said, how long is the Big Three season? And Chris and I went, I have no idea.
I was like 6 weeks.
No disrespect.
It's not something that is being tuned into right now.
And I don't care to watch retirement.
I think part of it just has to do with, like, I don't know the numbers around this. I'm assuming viewership isn't super high around the Big Three. It's watching a lot of retired NBA guys just play basketball. Play court. And I mean, I watched the first season of it.
Washed NBA players too. Like,
I watched the first season of it, and it was pretty decent. But
the first year was decent. I caught the hype and watched it too. It was pretty cool.
But as the years go on, like, you have to keep refreshing the talent pool because, yeah, guys in their late 30s, early 40s, like, once they hit mid 40s, like, they can't even play half court anymore, right? So I think the reason why I didn't want to talk about it is because I think it's such an unserious offer. I think it is 100% a publicity stunt. It has nothing to do with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, any of it. I think it's just Ice Cube knows that the league is probably not in a great spot right now. And the whole, like, oh, I didn't want this to get out until the tournament's over. If you didn't want it to get out before the tournament's over, then don't offer it until the tournament's over.
You're right.
Right?
You're right.
Like, because he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to offer it to her before she's – because hasn't she already said she's going to the league anyways? So,
I'm pretty sure. I mean, if
so – there was no harm in waiting until it's over.
Agree. Like, I don't know.
So let me ask y'all this, though, because this is where – this question is where I think people – okay. Put yourselves in Caitlin Clark's shoes. If you, hypothetically, if you got offered that $5 million and it's a real offer, like, hey, if I take this deal, I get my $5 million. At the expense of sitting, you will not enter the draft for the WNBA and you basically won't play your rookie year. Chris, would you take that deal?
Oh, yeah. If you're talking to me, I would take the deal.
No, I think that she has way more.
Oh, wait. If you're asking me if I'm Caitlin?
If you're Caitlin Clark, like you're in Caitlin Clark's shoes. Bro, I'm taking that. What?
No. You have way, you have way more to gain by actually going to the WNBA. I think she does.
Sabrina is the highest paid player. I think, or one of the three highest paid players. Sabrina makes $205,000 a year.
It's not about the salary that she's going to make going to the WNBA. I think it's way harder for them to market her if you're Nike or any number of endorsement deals that are going to come her way. I think that going to the big three is very tough to market. But if you become the face of the WNBA, the salary isn't going to follow. But I think that all the notoriety and everything that comes with being the biggest name in the women's game and helping grow the women's game, I think, is the appeal for her. Because what do you gain by going to the big three besides the $5 million? She could probably make more than that in endorsements outside of the WNBA.
Hell no. Like, and the reason
I think that she can with where she's at right now.
She can't make, I'll tell you like this, though.
She's going to get a shoe deal.
She won't make $5 million this summer. And so she's going to enter the WNBA. She's going to be drafted.
You risk ruining future earnings potential.
I don't, bro, if you really look, though, I don't even think there's five WNBA players that have made $5 million in their entire career, including endorsements. I don't think there's five that have made $5
million. Caitlin's going to up that revenue. That's a fact.
But that revenue being, bro, $5 million. Sabrina makes $200,000. That means, times that by five, that's $1 million. Sabrina has to now on base. I get it. Base
salary deal too, though. On her shoe deal is doing bank right now.
Still didn't make $5 million. I promise you, she ain't make no $5 million in the past.
We're looking at it right now, though. But we got to think about it, and you can't. I know $5 million right now sounds good.
For a year. It's only a year.
Yeah, that sounds really good. But if you're in that position, as you got to think the long-term game. How many – we've heard this story of so many people. Like, yeah, I turned down the money now because in the long-term, I'm going to make money doing going that way. I think, yeah, it sounds good. It sounds crazy to turn down five, no matter what position you are. But long-term
– here's where you're wrong. Article from October of last year. Sabrina signed a deal with Nike worth $24 million. And launched her first signature apparel and shoe collection.
How many? Okay, but how many?
But Caitlin's going to make more than that.
How many years? How many years is it on that $24 million deal?
Oh, I don't know.
Like that, they didn't give her $24 million up front. She got the deal, so that's probably. Let's just hypothetically say she signed a 10-year, $24 million deal. So Nike, on top of sales, so we're not even going to factor sales. That's doing too much math. So she makes $2.4 million a year off of Nike. We'll just hypothetically, okay, that's 2 years. If Caitlin Clark take that $5 million, she's still going to have the same offers next year. Like, she's still going to be marketed the same way. Her sitting a year is not going to change the fact that Caitlin Clark has taken over the country. And so to sit out a year and play for them $5 million, I would not blame her one bit. Now, I get the contribution of growing. The point is that we're trying to grow the women's game. Listen, I'm sitting here. I watch women's college basketball.
I'm also saying that's just Nike for Sabrina.
But we hear
a bunch of commercials she's doing.
We hear so many times, like, we hear Sabrina. But then that goes to the point everybody's like, Sabrina. But we hear so many times, like, all these other female athletes aren't getting these deals. Let's just be honest, bro. A Duke men's basketball player just got a nail polish deal before any major woman in women's college sports. There's women in women's college sports and women's basketball that don't have a nail polish deal, but a Duke men's basketball player did. The marketing for the females is not out there to get that.
We're not taking shots at Jeremy.
I'm not taking shots at the player getting the deal. What I'm saying is the marketing. ability for the females is different because we just watched a male basketball player get a nail polish deal before any
but here's another argument. She makes $5 million, she goes to the big three, boom, tears her ACL, never plays again.
Then she walks away with $5 million and still made more playing basketball in a year than
what do you get from playing with a bunch of old washed up
$5 million?
But that's now we're talking about.
The you get offered NBA. More by Nike if you go to play in the WNBA than you do going to play in the big.
If you told me, Dalton Connect got offered this deal, I would say hell no, because if he gets drafted in the first round, he's gonna be making more than $5 million in his first year. But because you're telling me, and I hate to say, but we know the disparity of how much men make in the NBA and how much women make in the WNBA. The highest paid player makes $200,000. But on your base salary, it'll take you 20 years to make what I can make on a 6-week deal. Basically, I can travel to LA, Atlanta, New York, Dallas, and California, and Los Angeles, and play in the big three, and I can make $5 million.
I think she makes up that $5 million difference by going to the WNBA compared to going to the big three. I think if she goes to the big three, if she goes to the big three, then she's getting offered like $20 million. If she goes to the WNBA and she becomes the face of the WNBA, I think we're talking $35-40 million for her Nike deal on top of everything else she's going to make plus her base salary. I don't think that you gain anything by going to a league that nobody cares about. And it's just, you're playing against a bunch of washed up old men. And then it's going to be, oh, Caitlin Clark, see, she can play with men. Maybe. That's also to say, like, can she compete?
And in a 3-on-3 format, half court, like,
it doesn't.
First of all, the WNBA is growing. They had their best, you know, profited season and all that, record-setting season and all that. It's just going to keep going up. Caitlin's going to bring in more revenue. It's going to drive up salary increases.
Who has
got to play a long-term game.
The Fever got the first pick again, so they basically could back-to-back get Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin.
And by her,
we're going to have Aaliyah and Caitlin on a team, so that means the Eastern Conference is going to have –
that boosts the value of a franchise that nobody really cares about right now in the WNBA, because there's already some established ones, whether it be the Storm, the Mercury, the Aces, the Liberty, but – Caitlin Clark going to Indiana makes the Fever a more valuable franchise.
And then back-to-back Aaliyah Boston and then Caitlin Clark together. I agree. But I'm just saying, like, bro.
If you sit out a year, she doesn't get to play with her, likely.
Hey, I just made I made $5 million Aaliyah Boston playing for like $60,000. I'm playing for $5 million for 6 weeks. I miss out on playing with you, but you're making like $60,000 a year. I'm just saying, like, money at the end of the day, I'm a person. Listen, money rules all. If you're telling me I can still play in the WNBA. Now, what if she get drafted by the Fever and tear her, like, if we play the if she gets hurt game, what if she tear her ACL on the first?
She already has the Nike deal, which is worth more.
I still think if she goes to the big three, I still think she get the shoe deal. The shoe deal is
lower value if she does the shoe deal with the big three.
Because the Nike's going to be like, okay, let's say we pay you 10 years, $35 million. So we are not thinking about year one of a Nike deal when we sign you. If we sign you right now, you go play in the big three. Guess what? If Caitlin Clark drop a shoe before she plays in the big three and she plays in those games in that shoe's going to make a killing. Nike is still going to get their money with Caitlin Clark being in the big three because they are selling her name and her image and her likeness. They are not selling the Indiana Fever. They are not selling the Las Vegas Aces. It doesn't matter. They are selling her name, image, and likeness. Caitlin Clark is still worth 10 years, $35 million, even playing one summer in the big three. I still think because if Nike doesn't do it, or if Puma doesn't do it, or Converse or whoever doesn't do it this year, they're going to leave money on the table by not getting Caitlin Clark. So whether she take that $5 million and play in the big three, the shoe deal is going to come and sign anyway, and she still could come and play in the WNBA next year. I don't want to tell a woman that may not make $5 million in her basketball career to not take $5 million. You may never make $5 million off a base salary. You got to hope that all the brands will offer you enough money to make that.
Where does Ice Cube have this money? He's complaining. He's been complaining about funding and all that. Suddenly he has $5 million to pay. So that all that does is put a target on her now, because now the other dudes in the league. You're giving her $5 million? So it's all just crap. I don't believe anything. I don't even think he has the money to do it. So I think it's all bullshit.
First off, Ice Cube has $5 million to spend right now.
He has it, but is he really going to get I don't believe it.
I think he would. I think he would, because here's what business guys do. That business has not been flourishing in years, it hasn't been doing good because it's been washed players, not a young phenom coming in, allowing
female too. So now you're gonna put Rashad McCants and all these, and they're gonna make her look bad. I'm sorry,
Ice Cube. Do I care about that? You're bringing me money. I don't care.
That's why Caitlin Clark should care. That's why she should care.
Because it's going to ruin her image.
It's not about Ice Cube. It's about how does Caitlin Clark look going to the big three? And she doesn't gain anything by going to the big three.
It can only hurt her.
If the big three was a successful basketball entity, then I think, all right, maybe you could entertain it. But it's not a successful product. It doesn't help you.
If it was successful, they wouldn't call Caitlin Clark, though. Like, if it was successful, they wouldn't be calling Caitlin Clark.
They're calling because they're floundering. They are calling because they are on the verge of popular.
Not being existing.
Like. And maybe the
same crying about the NBA not supporting
them. When the PGA Tour was at its lowest point, post-Tiger, and they were trying to figure things out, they were calling Michelle Wee to come compete on the PGA Tour. Why? It gave them a little bit of a ratings boost. She competed against the men, ultimately didn't make the cut. So then she's gone for the weekend. And guess what? Then ratings went back down. That would be exactly what would happen with Caitlin Clark. She'd be popular for a couple of weeks. And then we'd be like, yeah, I would tune into Caitlin Clark, but it's the big three.
And then she's getting locked up by one of these average NBA former NBA players. And yeah, I was like, she can't play. Yeah, it just looks bad. It just looks bad. So why would she do that? It would just mess up her money long term.
She could get the money now,
but long term, you just lost out on maybe even more money because like 1 year in the freaking big three, because you got locked up by Rashad McCants or one of these.
Are we sure she's gonna just be
Salabrini and now your reputation ruined?
But are we sure?
Money right now in that situation? She's gonna make more money long term. It's a long-term game. There's only one, right now,
the standard of saying that Caitlin Clark is going to make all that money in the long term is Sabrina. Like, that's the – we're pointing to, look at what Sabrina did. We think she's probably going to follow that same cloth as far as promotability, right? Like, she's probably going to be bigger than Sabrina. We all agree on that. Like,
they're the biggest athletes right now.
So you're right.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong. But also at the same time, we see how much money there isn't in the WNBA. We see how many WNBA players are not. But even still, like we're talking,
there's going to be more money for that though.
We don't know that she's going to be. We don't know that the base salary is going to go up.
It's happening. It's already happening.
It's been going up.
It's going up. It could also plateau though. There's a point where it could go up, boop, and it could stay steady. Now it could get high enough where it's staying steady like that is cool. But there's gonna be a maximization of how much
made all of her money by the time it plateaus.
Man, I'm just saying to make $5 million.
We got Juju's coming up. There's an influx of great women's hoopers who are coming up. So do that much. You know what that means? They come in, and that's just going to keep growing. The game's going to keep growing and growing and growing. Right now, the WNBA is in a tremendous spot right now, and it's continuing. They just had their best season money-wise and ratings-wise, so it's going to go up. So you have to play a long-term game. You just can't play, I'm going to get this money from the freaking big three.
You see, Chris, this is what's wrong with men like Mo that just don't appreciate the women's game, and – They hate women at the end of the day, and it's so shameful. And the fact that Mo hasn't been watching for 3 or 4 years, and therefore he doesn't appreciate the game, and it's honestly sad, and it's why I didn't want to take part in this discussion.
But I have started. The thing is, though,
buy WNBA League Pass first, and then we can start talking.
Show us
your league pass account, Mo. Show us your league pass. You hear me? I need to see the password.
No. Show me your renewal.
Guess what? I don't even have NBA
stick version.
I don't have NBA league pass, so I damn sure ain't getting WNBA league pass when I ain't even.
It's not a great price. It was $25 last year.
I bet, and I ain't getting it. I ain't getting NBA league pass, so I'm not getting
WNBA. If you wanted to talk about this topic, go watch the Big Three.
Whatever channel it is on.
Rashard McCants versus Jamario Moon for the Big Three title. God.
Go see Steven Jackson versus Big Baby.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the Big Three, listen to a real podcast like the Competitive Hedge podcast, which is going to be out later this week.
Go listen to Get a Bucket podcast.
Go listen to True Hoopers Get a Bucket. Go listen to Off the Ball. Go listen to the Hoopers pod. Like, they're the best.
Go listen to anything Up in Flames right about now, because that's how we're going to close the show. Make sure you go listen to Get a Bucket. Make sure you go check out Competitive Hedge. He actually winning you some money, too. Like, people got to stop sleeping on, hey, Cam winning money over there now. So if you follow his bet, you take the losses. You're going to lose. It's going to happen.
And if you're Mo, you complain about them in the morning when you lose one baseball bet.
Yeah, I just had to let you know. Like, first off, out of respect.
You're what's wrong with sports betting culture. You're just looking for easy wins. You're trying to pull a Jonte Porter. Like, it's not happening, Mo. Like, you need to do your research.
But you know what?
We don't have to talk about that. We need to talk about that because that's
no,
that's,
we don't. I don't want to talk about Jonte Porter betting because I'm gonna be honest. All they're doing, show
call, how comes call out the of, number if you're betting Jonte Porter. That's what I'm saying.
When you're telling me Vegas is the most that this is the highest, bro. Listen, I want to meet the people that have gambling problems that are betting on Jonte Porter overs or unders. If you click on his name on any sports betting app and pick an over or under for any of his player props, you have a problem anyway. That's the real discussion. Like Ken said, call the number 1-800. I got a damn problem gambling because I'm betting on you are now betting Jonte Porter over unders, bro. You're down bad and you're about to lose your house. That's what's happening.
His brother, Michael Porter, was like in his statement, like, I've known my brother my whole life. Oh, really? Thank you for having me. I remember somebody said that, and I started hysterical laugh because they're like, oh, thanks for letting us know that.
Yeah. Between the ages of 13 and 15, I didn't know my brother, but at 16,
that was the first part of the statement. I've known my brother my whole life. He would never do something. I'm like, oh, well, of course you know your brother. It's obvious we know your brother. You knew your brother your whole life. Like, come on now, man.
Yeah, I just find
that's why he's guilty, because of that statement. That's why I think he's guilty. Yeah,
that found all the guilt in the world. But on that note, I appreciate everybody for tuning in. I appreciate everybody for listening. Make sure you go check out Off the Ball podcast. Make sure you check out Get a Bucket. Make sure you check out Competitive Hedge. Check out the Hoopers. And check out everybody else over there at Off the Ball Network. On that note, be well, be safe. Up in Flames is out.